You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Lule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon. He has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 135 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by Metal Rocks, custom-made jewelry right here in BC. Check out their link on our website and all the great custom pieces they have to offer. I'm your host, Brian Warishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. Ugly is the only word we can use to describe what happened in Edmonton last week as the BC Lions dropped their second straight game to open the 2019 season in Mike Riley's return to Commonwealth. The Eskimos dominated in every facet of the game, and in the second half, they were doing what they wanted when they wanted to do it. Mike Riley had strong words for his teammates after the game, and it's gut check time for the Lions as they now travel to Calgary to take on the Grey Cup champion Stampeders. Tonight, we talked to Lions offensive lineman Sook Chung, who was a key free agent signing this offseason, about what went wrong in Edmonton, playing with a new group of guys, and his role in the Sikh and South Asian communities as a Lions ambassador and mentor. Ryan Ballantyne of the CFL Horseman podcast will also stop by to chat about his Stampeders as they prepare to welcome the Lions to McMahon Stadium this Saturday. Mojo Kemp is away this week, so I'll be flying solo. So let's get into a bit of a review of the game and look ahead to this week's game against the Stampeders. There's not much to say except it was a really ugly performance by the Lions last week. Mike Riley is lucky to be walking after the beating he took at the hands of the Eskimos. Not only was it ugly, but it was disappointing as well because it was a big night for Mike and basically the whole team let him down. Obviously, Riley was not happy after the game, and in this clip via bclions.com, he spoke to the team after the game, and you can tell by his serious tone, he was not impressed.
I know we're capable of it. It's not physical. It's up top, man. It's up top. Believing in your brother, believing that he's going to get his job done and you're going to get your job done, right? And playing for each other. So I don't know what motivates you. It doesn't really make a difference to me, but get motivated, man. Figure out what it's going to take, because it's not just going to happen, I promise you. We can't just show up and go through the motions and expect, hey, we got a great group of guys, so we're going to win. Work harder than you've ever worked before. I promise you, the reward at the end will blow you away. But if you don't do it, I'm not trying to live with that regret. All right? I'm not trying to live with that. I don't think anybody else in this room was. I came here to play with you guys, all right? You guys all came here to play with each other. We're here for a reason. Not going to get done unless we do it together.
You always hate that one of those talks are happening 2 games into a season, but it was no doubt warranted, especially from the guy that was taking the beating out there. Mike was pissed off. He was frustrated, but dead serious as well. The message was clear. We have to be better. And guys, I didn't come here to take beatings like this. So while Mike Riley was just trying to survive, the man who replaced him in Edmonton was having another strong night. The Lions' defensive line didn't get a sniff on Trevor Harris, and they couldn't stop the running game for the second straight week. Trevor Harris was 25 of 33 for 294 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a 132.6 efficiency rating, which is outstanding. Once again, the lack of a running game didn't help the Lions. There was a stat on Twitter the other day that the Lions are passing the ball 81% of the time on first down over their first 2 games of the season. And if that doesn't help opposing defensive coordinators prepare to face the Lions, I don't know what does. That's extremely predictable, and while the Lions' passing game may be their bread and butter, the running game simply has to get going or the Lions aren't going to do anything this year. John White had 8 carries for 24 yards, while Mike Riley chipped in 6 for another 24 while he ran for his life, and Brandon Rutley had 1 carry for 5 yards. In contrast, C.J. Gable had 23 carries for 111 yards. Jarius Jackson has to find a way to get this running game going, and if he can't, the Lions become a one-dimensional team, and as we saw with the Edmonton Eskimos, they just pin their ears back and send the house every play. And unless the Lions can come up with some quick release plays and get that running game going, it's going to be another long game on Saturday against the Stampeders. Another concern was the adjustments. The Lions had no answer to deal with the tenacious Eskimos' pass rush. No screens, no draws, no quick release plays to keep the rush of the Eskimos in check. This is leaving a lot of fans questioning the ability of offensive coordinator Jarius Jackson. I'm not sure you can put all the blame on the lack of adjustments on Jackson, or perhaps the adjustments were installed and the players weren't executing. But the longer this goes on, the more heat is going to be on Jarius Jackson and the rest of a young coaching staff. Defensively, the Lions struggled as well. No sacks on Trevor Harris, over 100 yards given up along the ground for the second straight game, untimely penalties. I think you're getting the picture here. It was ugly. The only real positive was the first drive of the game and the kicking of Sergio Castillo, who went 5-for-5 on his field goal attempts, including a 50-yarder. Well, enough about that game, but you can guess what the keys are this week. The Lions have to protect Mike Riley. You brought Mike Riley here to do a job, and you've got to let him do it. He can't do it if he's constantly running for his life. The Lions need to establish a running game. 81% passing on first down isn't fooling anyone. It's predictable, and it's just not going to work. The Lions have to get pressure on Bo Levi Mitchell. The pass rush must improve or Mitchell will pick the Lions apart. The Lions have to get better on run defense. We'll see if anything changes with Junior Luke getting the start this week over Claudell Lewis, but plugging up the middle of that defense and getting support from the linebackers is going to be key. The Lions have to do better in that department. Of course, better coaching, better adjustments, and execution of those adjustments by the players. Jarius Jackson cannot have a one-dimensional offense. And that has to start changing this week against a Stampeder team that will be looking for its first win as well. You got to take advantage of a Calgary team that is also working its way through the changes as well as injuries. The Stampeders struggled against the Ottawa Redblacks both on offense and defense in some areas, and the Lions have to take advantage of that early on in this season. Losing 3 straight to West Division opponents isn't going to cut it. As for lineup changes this week, J.S. Waugh, the practice roster pluck from the Edmonton Eskimos, is going to start at center this week with Hunter Stewart moving back to the guard spot. David Foucault is going to move back to tackle, and Brett Boyko is going to be placed on the one-game injured reserve list. Lions went out and signed Brandon Dozier, who will slot in at safety where he was an all-star in Montreal's defense under Rich Stubler. Dom Termanson will make way for Anthony Thompson, who moves from safety to the field corner spot. As we mentioned, Junior Luke is getting the start at nose tackle this week as well, and Claudell Lewis will take a seat in an effort to get a better push up front and better run stopping in the middle. And before we get to our first guest, Sook Chung of the BC Lions, I just want to take a moment to talk about some of the comments I've been seeing on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media spots from fans. Look, you know, fans are entitled to opinions, but to be bailing out on this team 2 games into a season where they have so many changes on this roster is a little over the top as far as I'm concerned. Yes, the Lions have not played well. Yes, they have some issues, but this team has a lot of talent on it, folks. Give them some time to gel, and hopefully it starts this week. But, you know, we've seen it before. The Lions started 0-5 one year and won the Grey Cup. So give this team some time to gel and find their feet underneath them and get things going. There's no reason to give up on this team yet. Hopefully they can play a lot better game this weekend and get a win in Calgary and then start to get on a roll. But, this team is going to take some time, folks. And, bailing out on this team and calling them garbage isn't going to help them win any football games. It's not going to help get people into BC Place when they come home on July 11th to have a rematch against the Edmonton Eskimos. This team is going to figure things out, and it just needs some time to do so. Stick with them, folks, and try and support them as best we can right now, because it's a work in progress and it's going to take some time. Okay, for a little more on last week and a look ahead to this week, we'll bring in our first guest of the night, Suk Chung was a big-name free agent signing by Ed Hervey and the BC Lions this offseason, and he'll be front and center in the trenches trying to get this team on track in Calgary this week. He joins us on the line right now. Suk, first of all, welcome back to BC. Welcome to the BC Lions, and thanks for coming on with us tonight.
Appreciate that. Thanks for having me on, Brian.
There's been a lot of people throwing shade at the Lions after last week's game, but you were there in the trenches and facing that Eskimos defensive attack. What happened last week?
It was a tough showing by the front five, and we got to keep Mike Kleiner. And end of the day, that's our job up front, and that's our job up front, and we're not satisfied with what we put on tape, and that's got to get better. And I think that's a team effort as well.
Lions offense has been a little bit one-dimensional so far in the first two games. What do you guys got to do to get the running going and get more of a balanced attack?
I think that's the key. And playing in the CFL, you're going to have a balanced attack. And unfortunately, we got into a situation in the later in the game where we got to get on the board, and now we're in pass-heavy concepts and things of that nature. But having a balanced attack and definitely moving forward, that's definitely the goal, having a balanced attack and keeping teams honest and, showing teams that we can run the ball. And when it gets called up front, we got to make it work and show Jarius Jackson, that our offensive coordinator, that, hey, you can have some trust calling the run.
Yeah, as an offensive lineman, you guys love getting dirty and run blocking and pushing your will on people. When a team gets rolling like the Eskimos were, how hard is it to stop the bleeding? Because it just seemed like everything they wanted to do was successful.
Unfortunately, yeah, those games are going to happen in the CFL. You just got to bounce back. But yeah, it did seem like a lot of things were going right for them. And sometimes you're fortunate enough to be on the other side of the ball, and sometimes you're on the negative side of the ball. So just up front, based just up off front, I think we got to have more balanced attack, but we have to make the run work, and keeping number 13 as clean is number one priority.
Yeah, talking about Mike Riley, he addressed the team following the game. He took a lot of punishment in that game. What was the reaction from the group following his speech to the team?
We gather around Mike. Mike's our leader, and a lot of new faces in general on the team, and it's important that we just stick together. And the things Mike was saying, they were the truth, and we will continue to lead. Let Mike be our leader, and we definitely got to improve up front for him.
You talked about all the new faces, including on the O-line, including yourself. It's probably the most critical unit of any football team, but how far off do you think this group is from finding that cohesiveness needed for success?
Definitely. I think having cohesiveness and having guys staying in a stable spot will help us up front. And unfortunately, we're making moves again this week on the line, and just getting to know guys who are playing beside you. And it's going to come. We're not very far off, but we also have to understand there has to be a sense of urgency, and we might be plugging and playing some guys, but we have to still have a sense of urgency and protect up front.
Well, let's leave that game behind and learn a little bit more about you now. You began playing football in grade 9 at Terry Fox in Coquitlam, one of the perennial contenders in BC high school football. In fact, during your tenure there, the team won 3 straight provincial titles in 2006, 2007, and 2008. What attracted you to the game of football, and how did those high school years set you on a path to the CFL?
I guess just at a younger age, just being a bigger kid, whatever, but found the weight room first, I guess, and from the weight room was advised, hey, try wrestling, try football, try rugby. And I went out in my grade 9 year for the first time I played football, and that's exactly when I fell in love with it. I wasn't starting right away or anything, but it just seemed like a fit for me, the ultimate team sport, and a very unselfish thing you have to do in football. And you don't get recognized for many things, but it is it is the ultimate team sport to me, and I think that's what I loved about it.
Yeah, I volunteer with the New Westminster Hi-Awks, and it really is a life-teaching sport for kids. I find the kids are really, together with each other all the time, and it just teaches you a lot of life lessons as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely being, from high school, being such an important part of your upbringing and having football there and having, that group of guys around you that you get to share so many memories with through high school, it makes it, that much better. You're just not going to be around atmospheres like that for a long time of your life. And I was very fortunate to have a winning atmosphere in Terry Fox and very good teammates. And it just made that much more fun.
Yeah, from there, you moved on to another great program under Blake Neil in the University of Calgary Dinos, where you became a starter in 2012. You were named a CanWest All-Star and CIS All-Star in 2013 and 14. What was the college experience for you like?
Again, a great group of guys I had around me with the Dinos, and coming into a Blake Neil culture where it was established that the Dinos were a winning team, and to be a part of that, it was very important to me, just coming from a winning school and Terry Fox, now being able to compete with probably the top guys, the CIS, and the culture with the Dinos was awesome and everything I could ask for.
Blake Neil is now running the program here at UBC. What was he like to play for, and who were some of the coaches that you've had over the years that you feel have impacted your football career?
Yeah, definitely Blake Neil, who went out of his way, showed up to Terry Fox, and there were offers down south where it didn't quite pan out, and Calgary was my first Canadian option, and I pursued that. Blake was a huge part. When you're a young kid coming from high school going to college, it's quite the transition, and Blake made it very, very, very a smooth transition. And some of the coaches that had a huge impact on me were guys like Steve Barato, who was my offensive line coach for 2 years there, Ron Meyer, who was also my first O-line coach at Calgary, Dwayne Harris, who's the head coach now at the Dinos, who was just a great leader to be around and a great member of the Calgary community.
You have a new offensive line coach now in Brian Chu. How is he fitting into that role, and how do you like being coached by him?
Yeah, Brian Chu is a great O-line coach, and having a coach that's had 15 plus years of CFL knowledge, and he's played right in the center of the trenches, it's pretty cool having his knowledge and how quickly you can pick up things from, things he's seen over the years that are still hold true to this day. And having guys like him around are a crucial part into having our young guys and even our veteran guys learn the small nuances of the game.
What do you love about being an offensive lineman, Suk? Is it being part of that tight unit, or just flat out imposing your will on the guy across from you?
Things might be in a different order, but I mean, definitely being able to be physical for 60 minutes and, definitely playing with a group of guys that, it's five or six of us. We have to be on the same page in order to get this thing rolling. And I take great pride and leadership knowing that, hey, like up front, we got to get it going. And really it doesn't work without us up front. And it's a huge part of it for me.
Let's talk about your decision to come back to your home province and sign with the Lions this off season. You were part of a very good offensive line in Winnipeg. You became a starter there in your rookie year, and they were building something there. What sold you on leaving Winnipeg and coming back home to play for the BC Lions?
Definitely just coming back home was a big factor of swaying me to come back here. And having not been in Vancouver for 8 years, including with Winnipeg and the Dinos, it was definitely a huge factor for me to come back this way. And also just having a talk with Ed Hervey and his plan and his future for the Lions, it intrigued me. And we know that it's going to be a process, and it's going to take some patience at some times, but I'm very excited for what our future with the Lions holds. I believe we have a very, very skillful team and very explosive offense that once it gets clicking, it'll be fun to watch.
I read that you used to attend BC Lions games as a kid, and one of your early football influence was former BC Lion Bobby Singh. Back then, there weren't a lot of South Asian or Indo-Canadian kids playing football, but there's a lot more today. What does it mean to you to be a role model in that community?
It's a huge deal to me. I take a lot of pride in that as well. And I got to talk to Bobby in Kamloops during camp, and he had a lot of to offer me with roles I can take in the community. And I'm excited to even work with Bobby coming up here, and maybe we'll be getting something together. And for me, when I growing up, seeing another guy of my skin color playing in a professional league, it meant a lot. And I know I can have that influence on young youth now, but I take pride in my leadership in this community very seriously.
Are you talking about maybe starting up a football camp for that community or something along those lines?
Something along those lines. We haven't really nailed it down to what it is, but I am looking forward to getting involved more in the community, not just in the South Asian community, just with youth in general, and, you know, maybe showing kids who have never even had a chance to play football, like teaching them what football is and just the generals of it.
Got a couple of questions here from our Twitter listeners. AmeriFans wants to know, if we want everybody to have fun tonight, would he suggest that everybody suit Chung tonight? You know the song?
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that one before. Eric Edlin wants to know, what did you have to do mentally and physically in the offseason to prepare for coming to a new team?
Mentally, it was just a transition, changing playbooks and changing offensive coordinators. And every team, I mean, it's football at the end of the day, but there's just different language and how the system works. And being able to be here in the offseason, that helped me a lot transitioning with the playbook and the new language. And physically, I treat every offseason with the chance to get better and heal my body. And I had a great off-season physically.
What do you see yourself doing after your football days are done, Sook?
I'm not entirely sure right now, but I guess if I'm in Vancouver, maybe some real estate would be in the future for me.
Good stuff. Sook, it's been a pleasure having you join us tonight. It's always great to have you back home here in BC. We're sure you guys are going to get things turned around, so best of luck this week and best of luck the rest of the season.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's check in on things from a Calgary perspective now and welcome back regular guest to the program, Ryan Ballantyne of the CFL Horseman podcast and another fine show in the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Ryan, welcome back. I think this is the first time we've had you on the show to talk about a winless Calgary Stampeders team.
You know what? It might very well be. Unless, didn't BC make Calgary 0-1 a couple years ago? I think that might have happened possibly, as well, yeah. And we might have done a post game after that. But you're right; it doesn't happen all that often that Calgary's a winless team after week one. But nevertheless, that's where we are as we head into week three. Calgary doesn't have a win, although they do have a bye week already under their belt.
Yeah, it's not often that the Stampeders lose at home, but the Ottawa Redblacks handed them a loss in week one. Dave Dickinson has been preaching consistency at practice following the team's bye week. What were the issues in the opener that contributed to that loss in your eyes?
Well, there was a couple things. I mean, the injuries certainly played a good deal of the loss, and you hate to blame injuries, but Terry Williams goes down with an ankle, and the guy that stepped in as a returner there, I believe it's Gordon, he fumbles the ball, and Ottawa gets a touchdown out of it right, you know, a couple plays later. And S.A. Marabare as well as Junior Turner went down on the D-line, which meant that the Stampeders only had four defensive linemen. That was both before half. So the Stamps played the entire second half with just four D-linemen, nobody to rotate in or out, nobody to kind of help get to the quarterback. And you could see that there started to be less and less pressure on Dominic Davis as the game went on. And Davis is able to engineer a game-winning drive with less than 2 minutes to go. Bo Mitchell throws it into the corner of the end zone, you know, the front corner, I guess, of the end zone. And much like that, the ending of the 2017 Grey Cup, The ball was intercepted in very similar fashion, although this time there wasn't pass interference. Nevertheless, Jonathan Rose comes away with the interception, and the Stampeders lose. So the guy who shouldn't have even been on the field, most people's opinions, was the guy who came away with the game-clinching interception. So, I mean, look, were the Stamps going to go 18-0 this year? Probably. But, you know, they tripped in week one, and 17-1 is going to have to be good enough.
Yeah, Mojo's already at 16-2 now, so.
Mojo's on the right track. Yeah. He's figured it out.
You talked about the defensive line. The Stampeders didn't register a sack against Ottawa. They've got some big pieces missing with guys like Micah Johnson and Garrett Davis gone, not to mention Alex Singleton no longer in the fold. They gave up 125 yards along the ground as well, but they have to be salivating a little bit after what they saw in Edmonton last week. That defensive line's been banged up, and they recently added former Lion Jabbar Westerman. How will that look on Saturday, and do they have the pieces there to be better in week three?
Well, I certainly think that Westerman's going to get some time on Sunday, or on Saturday rather. But I'm not entirely sold on the defensive line yet. They've got their opportunity to prove me wrong here against a BC offensive line that was pretty porous against the Edmonton Eskimos. And one can hope from a Calgary perspective that they're able to step in and put a similar beating on the $3.25 million man back there. But really, I'm hoping that the D-line can get it together. I mean, when you look at the middle of the Stamps defense from last year, you had Micah Johnson, Alex Singleton, Adam Berger, and Tunde Adeleke in that safety spot. All three of those guys are gone. So right down the middle of the Stamps defense, they had to find something new. And that takes time to develop. You're not going to get Micah Johnson overnight. But Micah Johnson's making $250,000 playing for Saskatchewan, and they allowed 44 points last week. So you don't necessarily know that that's going to be the answer or whatever. But, you know, I expect the Stampeders to grow as the season goes on. You look at how many starters they changed over this year on the defense, and it takes time for that to gel. They still only allowed 27 or 28 points, which should have been good enough to win. And when you've got guys like Trey Roberson making three interceptions in a game, Brandon Smith with the pick six, if the offense was firing last week, I think that game is not even a close one at that point based on how the defense was playing. But the offense struggled so badly that the defense ran out of gas in the fourth quarter.
You talked about Roberson and Brandon Smith in the secondary, and that was going to be my next question. They've had a lot of changes back there as well, but they still gave up some big plays and 276 yards passing. Do you have concerns about that unit in any of those positions?
I get the CFL if you can keep a guy to 250, 275. That's all you're really looking for. We've seen some gaudy numbers in the CFL this year so far.
Yep.
And 275, that's really not that bad. When a guy comes out and has nobody's looking at their quarterback and going, wow, what a monster day. He had 275 yards. You know, that's a pretty pedestrian outing. And so you've got Roberson, Wall, and Smith in the backfield. Mechie won the job out of camp over Courtney Steven, and that was a bit of a surprise, from the pre-camp depth chart. And when you look at guys like Raheem Wilson, when we had Josh Bell on our show, he said that he is an every position guy, that guy. And he said he's learning the game, and the game's going to take him a little bit of time to lock in. But we saw that with Roberson last year, too. Roberson came in, and he struggled early in the year, and he became one of the best defensive backs on the team last season. So sometimes it just takes a guy with an immense talent to get ready and to adjust to the CFL game. And let's not forget that this is now just the third game that some of these guys have played. Amos was up here last year. After 10 days after signing, he was already starting for this team. So they like where he is. and Wilson out on the corner. I'm not all that concerned with the Stampeders secondary. It's the front seven that have some conversation to be had. But Corey Greenwood came in and had 9 tackles last week, so you can't really argue with his production. And I just felt overall that the Stampeders defense played incredibly well, considering how injured they ended up being by the end of the game.
On offense, the Stampeders have always been known to have a great offensive line, but that unit had its struggles as well in week one, and it showed in the running game and the fact that Bo Levi Mitchell never really got into a good rhythm with his offense. What challenges are the offensive line facing, particularly with this season-ending injury to Brad Erdos?
Well, Brad Erdos was a linchpin for this Stampeders offensive line. When you look at Bergman and Erdos in the middle, the plan was to have Erdos was going to be at guard, which meant that Sevier could step in and be the center, which would kick Ucombre Williams out to tackle. With the injury to Erdos, they've now had to put Sevier at guard, move Williams back over to center, and have Cassitati out on the far side at tackle. And, I mean, there are apparently some guys, and we had Danny Austin, the Stampede reporter, on our show this week, and there are some guys on the 1- and 6-game injured list here in Calgary that the Stampeders are very high on that will likely be offensive line starters by the end of the season. But right now, they're still trying to get healthy after getting dinged up in camp. So we might see some guys on the roster shift around here. So it'll depend on whether or not we get decent protection for Bo and some sort of hole for Don Jackson. I mean, 9 carries with 22 yards just isn't enough production from the run game. And with Terry Williams back healthy this week, and Don Jackson, I think you might see a little more of a running game. Although, I mean, your guys' defense has been porous in every stretch over the first 2 weeks. So it might be a little bit of pick your poison this week.
Yeah, for sure. Stampeders have always had a kind of a plug and play system on their offensive line, so I'm not going to lie, it's nice to see them struggling a little bit there.
They have one off game and they're struggling.
Yeah. Hey, we'll take it. As I mentioned, there was issues with the running game, and you talked about it. Bo Levi Mitchell never got on track, but there is some talent in that backfield among the receivers. How do those units get on track this week against a BC team that hasn't shown it can stop the run in 2 games this season?
Well, or the pass. I mean, BC hasn't stopped the pass either. And I'm not sure what's going on there. I mean, maybe it's adjusting to Claybrook's system that's happening there. Well, but
I think it's the same as what's going on in Calgary. There's a lot of new players on this team, and it takes time to gel, right?
Well, and hopefully it takes at least one more week. But when we're taking a look at Calgary's offense, I mean, you know, I think Calgary still has the best receiving core in the CFL. When you take a look at Eric Rogers, Reggie Bagleton, and Kamar Jordan when he comes back, although he's injured right now. But even Juwan Breskison is a revelation right now for this team. You know, when the deep ball's going down the field, you've got this guy with basketball legs jumping up to grab the ball and doing everything he can to move the ball downfield. And so there might be a little bit of a question with our Z receiver, with Klukas and Mayala, the first round draft pick. He may shift in during this week's game a little bit more. But we'll see what it comes to with the Calgary offense. Again, I think there's way too much talent here for them to have a couple off games in a row. Last year it was taking their foot off the gas. This year, that's certainly not going to be an issue. I don't think in the West you're going to have to win every week to keep up. But I'm not worried about Bo. I'm not worried about Rogers or Breskison or Bagleton or Don Jackson. We're just going to need to open the hole for them. And Ottawa brought a strong defense to town. We'll see if BC can replicate that kind of effort.
Saturday marks the return of Devon Clay, works to Calgary for the first time as a head coach. He's familiar with a lot of the personnel there, as well as the systems the Stampeders play. Do you think that's an advantage for him coming back to McMahon for the first time?
Well, I mean, he's been coaching against Dickinson's offense in practice for the last four seasons, I believe. And so that's kind of certainly a benefit. But we also know what the Stamps record is coming in off a bye week. When they do have a chance to come in off a bye week, they run plays that people haven't seen before, and they're able to run offenses that people aren't familiar with. So I think this is a perfect time for the Calgary offense to get Coach Clay Brooks on the opposite side of the field, because they've had a week to dissect what he's done with his defense in the last couple games. And I mean, Dave Dickinson is one of the best offensive minds in this league right now. And it wouldn't surprise me to see them have a varied game plan to prepare themselves for Coach Clay Brooks.
Sure. Glad I took the Eskimos tonight, because Winnipeg's starting to put a thumping on them now.
Oh, what's the score?
It is 28-12.
Oh, well, you know, I in my weekly predictions piece, I predicted the Eskimos would come back to Earth this week.
Yeah.
And they seem to be doing just that.
This lucky Whitehead kid's having a game. I want to talk about lineup changes this week. Who's coming in and who's coming out for the Stampeders this week?
We haven't seen a roster yet. And of course, coming off the bye week means that they've had even more time to rest. The reports out of practice is that Terry Williams is back. He had an ankle injury that kept him out of the second half. Junior Turner is on the sixth game, so he will not be back. I haven't heard whether or not we'll see S.A. Marabare. I believe that he has been practicing, but he will be kind of that game day decision for this week. And so, I fully expect to see Westerman in the lineup this week as on the D-line. And then after that, I mean, there's the problem is that right now, the starters that have gone down were the guys that you would have expected to step in as the backups. So I'm not a guy that gets to attend practice, firmly committed to the idea of who or where the actual backups are with this team right now, because there are a lot of names swirling around on a daily basis. And it seems that the Stampeders are putting in the guys that are having the best track. We'll just find out who those guys are when it comes to it. So should see a couple new faces in the lineup, but again, coming off the bye week with 2 weeks to rest, it'll be very curious to see who had a long-term injury and who was just out for the week.
Now, you had you made a comment about Mike Riley being the $3.25 million quarterback, and certainly Bo Levi Mitchell is not making much less than that. If there's a scenario,
$100,000 this year.
Well, if there's a scenario where Alex Singleton comes back to the CFL, do the Stamps have the money to bring him back?
I think right now the Stamps probably do have the money to bring Alex Singleton back if they need to. But when you're talking about Alex Singleton, it's going to have to come at a cost. And so I think should Alex Singleton not make the team, it wouldn't surprise me to see him back here in Calgary. His girlfriend lives here. They've got quite a life here, and he can make a decent amount of money here playing Canadian football. So if he doesn't make the Eagles, I see him returning to Calgary. Does Calgary have the money? Well, that might come at the expense of another player getting cut off the roster. And you know, with all love and affection for Corey Greenwood, I imagine that would be the guy. He's a 35-year-old player who is making in that kind of 150 to 170 range, and it's a heck of a lot easier to find an extra, you know, an extra 40 or 50,000 for Alex Singleton than it is to find a whole 230,000, 240,000 for him. So I think when you look at what's going to happen, it would cost somebody their job to have Alex Singleton come back on the team, and not just because of the roster ramifications. I think the salary cap would also play into that.
Sure. You had a prop bet on CFL Horseman podcast this week, and It was whether Bo Levi Mitchell would throw for over or under 375 yards. You were the only one that chose over. Come on, man. What are you thinking there?
I know. I don't understand why anybody else didn't come with me. I mean, let's look at what the BC defense has done the first 2 weeks, and they haven't played Bo Mitchell. I mean, with all due respect to the Edmonton Eskimos, they're not the Calgary Stampeders on offense. And so if the Edmonton Eskimos can put up 600 yards worth of offense on you, I'm pretty sure Calgary can do the same. So at that point, I really believe that, you know, I took the over because I expect Calgary to come out and put the boots to BC. You have to beat, you know, where I believe we only play you twice that this year. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
So total points matters in season series when you've only got two. And to drop the Lions to 0-3 and move yourselves up to 1-1 gives you a game and a half advantage in the standings. And even at this early point in the season, that matters. The tiebreaker matters. And so I expect both teams to be trying to pile on the points this week. I'm not, you know, do I expect to pick six with no time left when you're already up by 44? No. But you know, I expect that Calgary's going to try and get down the field. And you know, if you start moving guys in to stop the run, that opens it up for Bo. And you know he has no trouble firing it 50 yards downfield and going for the home run on every play.
Yeah, I just don't see him as traditionally a guy that puts up those big numbers. It's more of a...
He hasn't had many 400-yard games in his career. That's true. But a lot of that is about the Stampeders limiting the offense in the fourth quarter. If you go back over his career, the play selection in the fourth quarter does not send the ball downfield all that often because they've got the win, they've got the time, and they just kind of kill clock towards the end of the fourth quarter. So if you really need to put it on and you unleash Bo Mitchell for a full 60 minutes, I expect him to put up numbers this week.
Well, I'd like to see Mike Riley unleashed for a full half a game at least.
Well, I mean, it's hard when you're terrified and running for your life.
Well, that's by what I mean. Way, we haven't seen any.
How does Mike Riley shave his beard?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, you must have been flabbergasted by that.
I mean, you're a beard guy.
Oh, I'm a goatee guy. I don't.
Well, you're a goatee guy. Okay.
Beard or anything like that.
But like, Samson rids himself of his powers. I mean, that's awful. That's awful.
Well, he took some big licks last week, boy. That one where he landed on his neck, I thought, oh boy.
Oh yeah.
You know, and
but I mean, that's not the beard's what's kept him alive.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
Without a beard, you can't survive those hits.
Well, maybe it'll give him some clearing of the mind or something like that this week, and he'll be lighter or something on his feet. I don't know.
All that extra time shaving is time you're not spending studying defenses.
Clearly the beard wasn't working. So I'm
willing. No, but it kept him alive, Brian. Well, beard is what the extra testosterone that courses through a man with a beard that was as impressive as Mike Riley's. It really just, it keeps you going. It makes you stand up because when you get hit like that, your beard looks up at you and says, oh no, we don't stay down. We're a man with a magnificent beard. And then you stand up, you know, and you get back into the game without a beard down there to give him that kind of confidence. I'm terrified for Mike Riley's health this week.
Well, maybe he's got the beard tucked into his little pouch there.
Into his quarterback pouch.
Yeah.
You can reach in and rub it for luck.
We had you on a couple of weeks ago. And we talked about the Simone Lawrence situation, who, of course, he's now appealing that suspension. I want to talk about consistency here because Nick Usher laid a pretty good hit to the side of the head of Mike Riley in that game. It was he was well in the grasp of other players, and Usher came in late, hit him square in the side of the head with the crown of his helmet. He just gets a fine. Where are we with consistency in this league? Because it doesn't seem to apply. I mean, you know, we're talking about getting headshots out. The commissioner comes down hard on Simone Lawrence, and the very next week, you know, there's some liberties taken on Riley and perhaps other quarterbacks as well, and we don't see any suspensions.
Admittedly, I did not watch the game last week for BC and Edmonton, okay, so I can't speak on the hit specifically.
Okay.
However, when it comes to consistency, and maybe you can answer this question, I know the answer to this question before I even ask it. Was Riley sliding?
No, he was in the grasp of at least two or three other players on his way down, and Usher came in late with the crown of his helmet, hit him square in the side of the helmet.
So what I've been seeing from the CFL from a consistency standpoint is that when you are in the middle of a tackle and you get hit by a player in the head, whether it be leading with the crown of the helmet or not, it seems to be more forgivable than certainly what Simone did. And when Simone did what he did, Caleros was sliding. Yeah. There were other players around him who did not hit him. So it was very clear that he could have stopped before Simone flew into frame and hit him in the head. So I think this, the subtle difference of Caleros giving himself up versus being tackled, because it's not out of the realm of logic to say that while a player is being tackled, it's impossible to know at what point your head's going to make contact if you're that close, because they're changing angles, you're changing angles, and hitting him like that is an unfortunate coincidence. Now, should he been fined? Yes, because he led with the crown of his helmet, as per you just your description of the play. Mm-hmm. So should he have been fined? Yeah, absolutely. But suspended? I mean, they can't even keep Jonathan Rose off the field for shoving an official. Yep. So what's the point of suspending a guy when you know that that's just going to end up being a fine? Was Riley ahead or behind the line of scrimmage at that point?
He's behind the line of scrimmage. He was being sacked.
Okay.
And it was a third man. I think if you saw the play, you might change your mind a little bit, because I think it was.
And that's entirely possible. I mean, I don't, you know, and I'll tweet about it afterwards if that's the case.
He was well within the grasp, and
he was going down.
Yeah, he was on his way down, and Usher came in late and just popped him in the side of the head. But you know, I can see your side of the story as well, or I can see your opinion as well, that he wasn't giving himself up and it was in the midst of being tackled. I just thought it was a bit late and. As blatant as it comes as far as headshots go. So I was a little surprised that more didn't come.
I also find that Mike Riley does not get the benefit of the doubt from the officials in that way because he is tough, because he stands up, because his beard looks up at him and makes him stand up. that Mike doesn't get the credit in that way that some other quarterbacks get. I think guys who are more injury prone are more likely to get a roughing the passer call. I mean, let's not forget, you guys got 5 roughing the passer calls last week.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the 12 times that Riley was sacked or something, 5 of those turned into roughing the passer. Yeah. So, I mean, they did seem to protect Mike Riley last week.
Yeah. Somewhat. Well, they were all legit calls too, though.
Yeah, oh, and no question, like, I'm not questioning that either. From what I turned on the late stages of that game, and what I saw was just effectively that Riley was running for his damn life. Yeah. I think in one, I felt the worst I felt for him was at the one point, and I'm sure, I don't know if you've discussed it or not already, but the one moment where he got sacked like 2 plays in a row, and then one of them turns into roughing the passer, which gets him a first down, and then he's sacked 2 more times. Like, just let him off the field, for God's sakes. He's getting eaten for lunch.
I was screaming.
But at the same time, keep him in the game. For anybody who suggested that you shouldn't have had Mike Riley in the game, you're wrong. It was a 2-score game with 5 minutes to go. Riley should have been in the game. Absolutely. Because at that point, Riley has done better to worse teams. You know, he's done worse to better teams, if you will. Riley's fully capable of hitting those home run balls 2 in a row and getting you right back into the game. So I don't think Riley should have ever come out. But at the same time, I mean, I just felt terrible that he takes 2 big sacks and the referee's like, well, yeah, but one of them was so bad, we want you to get hit twice more. It's no good.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I think I tweeted at the fact, for God's sakes, get him out of there, because it was just getting but, so bad at that point. But you're right. I mean, you know, the game was not lost at that point, although it seemed like there was no hope. But, you know, and you're not going to get Mike Riley to take himself out of a game or
no, Jesus,
that's just not going to happen. So
they couldn't get him out of a game with a minute to go and up by 30 in Edmonton. So you're never going to get him to get out of the game with a minute to go down by 14.
Well, they asked him about it after the game and he just said, look, you know, I'm I'm gonna go down with the ship. I'm not gonna abandon my guys.
Yeah.
And that's just his mentality. So 2 weeks into the season now, anything that surprised you so far across the league?
I think the Red Blacks were a surprise, mm-hmm. Being as good as they were in the first 2 weeks. But I think that's probably the biggest surprise of anything I saw. Dominique Davis was very effective in the two games he played. And I think everybody was expecting Ottawa's offense to crumble in the absence of Trevor Harris and Greg Ellingson. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't happened. And William Powell, for that matter. But Moises Madou and Dominique Davis have stepped in and done very well there. I think that was probably the biggest surprise of the first 2 weeks to me. I mean, the Lions, you know, it takes time for teams to gel and all of that. So coming out of the gate at 0-2 isn't necessarily a huge shock. The Stampeders, same thing. They lost a game at home, which is unusual, but not a terrible shock. But the Red Blacks being as good as they are, I think that's the answer.
Yeah, I think one of the surprises for me was how well Cody Fajardo played for the Riders last week. I mean, I didn't see that coming. I didn't think he had a game like that in him. So who knows? Maybe they'll be okay with that quarterback situation there, but I'm not sure he can keep that up.
Ryan Dinwiddie put up 45 on the Stampeders in his first ever start, too. Yeah. I know it's not Fajardo's first start, but I said it when Caleros went down. I said I expected the Riders to be better offensively with Cody Fajardo, because I firmly believe that Caleros has been done since he came back from his leg injury in Hamilton, and he just keeps getting injured because he plays tentatively, and then he gets smashed because he's tensing up before the ball gets released. I haven't liked Zach Caleros for a long, long time now, and I think the Riders are better off with Cody Fajardo behind center.
Well, always a pleasure, Ryan. One of our teams are going to get their first win this week, and obviously I hope it's the Lions. It's been 10 years since the Stamps started a season 0-2.
You're going to have to hope.
The Lions are at risk of losing a third consecutive game to a West opponent, which is never a good thing, so this is a big one for both teams.
Yeah, you know that old expression, right? You put hope in one hand and something else in the other and see which one fills up first.
Your beard.
Yeah, and Mike Riley's beard hair. That's not already on eBay is amazing to me. I mean, he must have done it at home, but yeah. At least the haberdasheries are thriving in Vancouver.
Well, enjoy the game. Give the Horseman podcast a plug before we let you go.
CFLHorseman.ca or at Horseman Radio on all of your major podcast providers. That's iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, any of those. You can certainly check us out there. On Twitter, we are at CFL_Horseman. The same thing on Instagram. You can follow us at either of those. And myself, you can find me on Twitter at BBCanRyan. That's the Big Brother account, which has so many more followers than the old Podcast Orion account that I stepped away from that one entirely. So get us out there on Twitter. Hit us up. Vote. We have the big Chief Jerky contest on the forum. You can check into there and maybe win yourself some big Chief Beef Jerky. I know, Brian, you appreciate it when we brought it out for you.
You bet.
It's good stuff, and we'll send it out to you if you win. So come and check any of those contests out. And, of course, just pretty much enjoy the game. If you're in BC, watch the game. And then the next time you're in BC, go to the game. Nobody's listening to this show if they're not going to the game, right?
Probably not.
let's be real. Like, we can bemoan attendance between our two respective podcasts, but nobody who's listening to these shows is sitting at home going, "Wow, but I don't like the game day experience." They're in the stadium.
Yeah, well, except for the out of towners, they a bit of a different situation for them.
But. Well, yeah, sure. If you can't make it to the stadium, that's different. But yeah.
Speaking of Big Brother, that started up again. I'm sure you're watching. Do you have an early favorite on this American version?
There are a lot of people I like. I like the idea that Christy and Tommy have a secret alliance, being that Christy used to date Tommy's aunt. for a long time, and they've decided to work together, but nobody knows about that. So that's always good, because anytime you can have that kind of in-depth secret alliance, that certainly works well. As far as everybody else, it's really early. I mean, right now, all we're seeing is a hint of potential racism. Outside of that, it's tough to figure out what's going on, but, I'll actually, you know what, one more plug, if you'll allow it.
Sure.
I encourage people to download an app called TVCO. It's TVCO, people do kind of video podcasts, and, I'll be doing a Big Brother style, podcast with Andrew from my season, season six. The two of us will be doing a video podcast, and you can watch along and kind of check us out and subscribe. Again, I'm BB Can Ryan on there as well, and it'll send you a notification. We're going to be doing the show on Monday nights, so you can check in with us on Monday nights and see what's up in the world of Big Brother, see what's up in the world of myself and Andrew, and kind of keep up with us that way if you like.
Awesome. Good stuff, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure as always, Sir Brian. Can't wait to see the game this week.
All right, me too. Cheers. Well, that's it for episode 135, and I want to thank our guests, Sook Chung of the BC Lions and Ryan Ballantyne of the CFL Horsemen podcast, for joining us tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Metal Rocks. Make sure to check out what they have to offer in the way of handmade jewelry at https://ca/shop/Metal Rocks. This show is part of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Make sure to check out all the great shows that are a part of it at cfpodnetwork.ca and follow the network on Twitter at cfpodnetwork. Please subscribe and listen to the show on your favorite podcast app. Visit us at bclionsden.ca. Follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojocamp, and on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. That's podcast, PAWDCAST. Mike Riley now has a clean-shaven face, and hopefully that indicates a new-look BC Lions team in Calgary this week. Going 0-3 against West Division teams to start the season will put the Leos in a tough spot, so they need to figure things out quickly. Until next week, on behalf of the absent Mojo Kemp and myself, enjoy the game this weekend, and as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.